This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. This week's episode is brought to you by the Friends of the Magic Word. As we are continuing to go into 2025 and rapidly approaching episode number 900, we are getting a lot of people who have actually kind of bailed out of becoming Friends of the Magic Word, had to, for whatever reason, end their patronage, their donations, and also some of their monthly financial support. But on the other hand, we've had a few people who have stepped up and who have added, and I do want to recognize a couple of people who have donated and have become Friends of the Magic Word with their financial donations. And that would be, first of all, Mr. Tom Becker, and also to Richard Hatch. Thank you, gentlemen, very much for your financial support and liking the Magic Word podcast enough to put your money where your ears are. And for those of you who might be interested in learning more about how that you could become a Friend of the Magic Word and why it is that we need your support, things are still unchanged as to what our reasons are. That is, we still need to pay those domain charges and hardware and software charges. And even though I'm not going to as many conventions this year, I think I'm only going to 9 conventions, I still need to have some financial support to get me there so I can give you these daily updates. Now, today I had planned on actually kicking off the first of a couple of days of reports from the Magi Fest in Columbus, Ohio. As some of you are aware, I had some minor heart surgery, if there is such a thing as minor heart surgery, but I had an ablation, and all went well. I was in and out of the hospital and back home and recovering and doing well, but the doctor's orders were perhaps that I kind of take it easy a little bit. So I've decided to rest up and to miss this Magi Fest, but I'll be back again next year in 26 with that convention. So I hope to see you there. And there'll be other conventions I'm going to be going to. And if you listen to the Magic Whisper, then you will see and hear this week some of the other places that I'm going to be going. Which reminds me, someone had just recently asked me, saying, you overlooked the expo. Are you going to be going to that? Yes, I am. I forgot to mention the Collector's Expo in Las Vegas. So there we go. That's another one I plan to attend this year. But the next one out of the chute is going to be Blackpool, and it'll be huge. And I'm really looking forward to seeing so many of my people who are friends, not just those who are Friends of the Magic Word, but others who are just magicians who support the Magic Word and who are just friends of mine in general, who I don't get to see very often, and except whenever I do happen to travel overseas. So I'm really looking forward to that. So this week, we are speaking of going overseas. This week, we are actually speaking with someone over in Horsen, Denmark, and he was the winner of the 2022 Quebec FISM Comedy Award, and that's Morten Christensen. I spoke with him last year when he was one of the performers at Magic Live, and we have been friends for a while, but I take that back. I actually didn't sit down with him during Magic Live. It was after Magic Live was over, and we actually did a video conversation, which I had recorded on video. And if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, you'll see a link there that will take you to the video if you are more of a visual person, and it will take you to my YouTube channel, which is Texas Magician or Scott Wells Magic Word. There are so many different ways of which you can access that channel, and you can watch our video recording of this particular conversation. But he is someone who has not really been on the scene for a very long time, because he's only in his 20s, but he has certainly made a mark by winning comedy for FISM and has a bright future ahead of it. A lot of things he talks about here this week, which he has discussed at some conventions like he did at Magi Fest and at Magic Live, specifically about stage fright and how he deals with it. And we go into some detail about that, among so many other things, which is the reason I know you're going to be enjoying this week's episode. So please welcome my guest, Mr. Morten Christensen, here on The Magic Word. I'm glad today I have a guest with me who I had met a couple of years ago in Quebec when he had won at FISM. And he was a very funny guy. We got to be such good friends at the time and have remained so, but because of distances because he's over in Denmark and I'm here in Texas, both big countries in and of themselves, it seems like, that we haven't had a chance really to visit, although I got a chance to see him along with 1,600 other magicians at Magic Live in Vegas here just recently. And he was one of the highlights, a standout that time and time again, when I was talking to people for my daily reports, were saying that this guy was just the best. Morten Christensen is a very funny guy and has worked in comedy clubs. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that and what the comedy club situation is like over there versus, you know, here, and developing character and creativity. And I hope to get into a lot of different things, but who knows? It's just a conversation. So please welcome my guest today, Morten Christensen, right here from Horsen, Denmark. Have I got that right, Horsen?
Yes, yes.
Here we are. Hello, Morten. Good to see you, man.
You too.
So I wanted to find out about your experience when you had come over and worked at Magic Live. What was, I mean, before we get really into FISM, what was it like actually coming over here as a known entity? You mean you came over to FISM in Quebec and people perhaps didn't know you? Now they do, or they did when you came into Magic Live. So what was that like?
The greatest experience, because I'd always wanted to go to Magic Live, but because it's on the other side of the world, I didn't have the money to go if I wasn't booked to do anything. And then because of FISM, I finally had a reason. So it was really great. I really liked Stan, and it was a really fun convention, even though I didn't see that much of it because I was performing. But like one of the first things that happened was the day I got into the Orleans, that on the first day I was just looking around, seeing what's happening, where's the convention floor. And I meet Chad Long, and just and because I know Chad a little bit, and I'd written him a message after FISM telling him that he was a big inspiration in my act, and I hadn't seen him since. So he came over, gave me a hug, and just said, like, congratulations, since I hadn't seen him since FISM and since I won. And then another time when I was walking up to the convention floor, I met John Armstrong, that just pulled me aside and told me, like, oh, I've seen your masterclass on Vanishing Ink and he liked it. I'm like, okay, amazing. Like, because I've worked at a magic shop for forever, since I was a little kid. And I know all these people. So the fact that they knew who I was really amazing. So the fact that, like, I've seen a lot of John Armstrong's card magic, and the fact that he pulls me aside and he's, oh, you've inspired me. Okay, amazing. So a lot of that happened the whole weekend there at the convention. Had a great time, and I'm very flattered that people keep telling me, like, nice things about the show we did.
Yeah. Well, you were really busy. Certainly, Stan kept you occupied, not only with the Little Big Show, which I guess you repeated twice, and then you were on stage in the focus session. The general session. You did that twice.
Yeah. So we did the shows 2 days, but we did three shows each night. So six shows.
Six shows.
So the first day I was just locked in that room from 1 p.m. to 1 a.m. because we did rehearsals and all the technical stuff, and then with the performances. And so I didn't see any of the convention. And then I was so tired that I got to sleep early and then woke up basically just to go to the deal room and then do the shows. So the first time I was in the big room was for the general session, which I was speaking at. So I hadn't seen any of this.
That had to be quite an experience, which you're walking in saying, holy cow, they're 800 seat theater, and look at all these people. I mean, you hadn't seen that before until you walked out on stage.
So I don't think I saw anything actually on the program except the last show, last big show, because I wasn't performing or doing anything else. Because I was performing Monday and Tuesday, and then we did the general session Wednesday morning, afternoon.
You weren't lecturing there, but as I recall, when I saw your lecture, was it a Magi Fest, or where was it that you lectured?
Yeah, Magi Fest, I did lecture.
And that was last year, not this year. That was in 23, I think.
Yeah.
That's when we spent a little bit of time there, and I didn't get a chance to chat with you too long at the time. Great lecture, which, by the way, if anybody has an opportunity to catch his lecture, very creative. I don't buy a lot of stuff anymore because I'm not performing like I used to, but I have to admit, I bought some stuff from your lecture. Very good. Bought your notes and everything then as well.
Yeah.
Very clever, very creative. Being from Denmark, you had talked about how that Rune Flan is really the only other guy who's well-known there in Denmark. And so tell me about how that came about.
Rune has been famous since basically before I was born.
Is he that old?
he's 20 years older than
me. Okay.
He got success, or at least he got into the comedy magic business and got on TV when he was around 20 or something. So he's been doing it forever. But he's just so famous, like Seinfeld famous over here. He's done like sketch TV shows, movies, like, and touring shows. So he's so famous, but I didn't really know him when I got into magic. I just knew him as a comedian. I didn't realize he was like a really good magician, which I think which helped me, the fact that I didn't like look at him and many people will look at him and that's the only inspiration they'll have, but I didn't know him as a magician. But then when I'd been doing magic for a year or two, I heard that he was one of the best, and that was so weird. This comedian, like, oh, he's good at magic. And then I saw some of his shows and eventually got to become friends with him, and I work on his stuff, and he's the nicest guy, but he's also the reference. If any layperson knows a magician, they know him, and that's the person I'll get compared to all the time. Oh, you're sort of like Mondrian or whatever. Because the country is just so small that it's almost like there's only room for him, which is how it is. It's just always been that way.
So were you inspired by him, or was he a mentor of yours, and were you inspired by his comedy and or magic, or both?
When I realized, like, oh, he's doing stuff, and the way he did it, it was of course an inspiration, because he was then the only guy here he's the only guy that had a magic TV show since forever. And so, of course, I looked at what he was doing, but I was very, from the beginning, I knew I wasn't going to be like him, because that would then make it even more difficult to make my own personality shine through, because if they are going to compare me to him anyway, and maybe I shouldn't then feel like I'm just a copy of him. He's really good, and it was nice. When I was beginning, in the beginning of my magic adventure, that the one magician on TV is actually a good magician that everybody liked. And then, I don't know, 8 years ago, I made something for him, and he calls me out of the blue. I was still living with my mom at home, and then he got my number from a friend, and he just calls me up and like, hey, this is Room Plan. I heard you can help me with something. Okay. Sure. And he was like nearby. He lives in Copenhagen, which is like a three hour drive away, but he was nearby, and he came over, and I showed him stuff. Very unreal that Runeslayer was some kid in my mom's house. And then we just stayed in touch, began working together on a lot of stuff, and now he's one of the only people that I will show stuff to very early and work on stuff, and and I work on my stuff and his stuff, and I helped him with some of his TV stuff and his touring shows. And it's very fun to get to work on some of the big stuff that I'm not able to do myself.
Well, it's interesting at your young age, and you're how old? About
27? I'm 28.
28. That you recognize early on that it's important to make your own way, because if they are, like, let's say here, people a lot of times want to be a clone of Lance Burton or of Matt King or whoever is the person of the day, or Chris Angel, and there's only one of those, whereas there's also only one of you. And if you're trying to copy and be like somebody else, so in other words, well, why not get Matt King instead of getting XYZ of this person? And you recognize early on, and I applaud you for that, of being able to recognize, if I want people to want me, then I'm going to have to be my own self and have my own personality, even though you can be inspired by and perhaps learn a few things from, but then you kind of go on from there. You could take a concept or an idea of someone's, and rather than doing it exactly the same way they do with their same pacing, timing, choreography, and scripting, of taking it and making it uniquely yours, because then they want you.
Yeah. And because the country is so small, it would be very dumb for me to look like Rune. And that there's a lot of other magicians that have done that. They see what he's doing, and they want to do that and don't think any further than they don't have to. But... I've always just known that I wanted to be original, doing my own stuff, because, like, if why would I be on stage? They could just have Rune or somebody else. So that's just always how it's been. And then luckily, then whenever people compare me to him, that I know that, oh, I'm not like him, or that I know what he's doing, I know who I am. So yeah, I'm very comfortable in that. But it will happen every single time that I'm doing something or whatever it is, that Rune Clan's name will be mentioned. And it's fine because he's a great guy. I love him. We're good friends. Even at magic conventions, he is the only other Danish magician people know, like in the community.
Sure.
So even at Magic Live, at the general sessions, I would ask on stage in front of 800 at the time, like, oh, name three Danish magicians. And they can name me and then Rune, and then that's it. Because nobody knows anybody else.
Right.
Because again, the country's small, we haven't like had anybody huge here that's done stuff. And so, yeah, I'm fine being compared to Rune and being one of the two Danish magicians people know.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like some other countries where they got Fred Capps and Tommy Wonder and Hank Vermeer and Peter Pitt and so many other people who have come from some other countries in your general area.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
but specifically, and also, many others. I don't want to start leaving out anybody, but yeah.
Yeah.
But specifically in Denmark, it is kind of a unique.
Yeah. And there is other magicians, of course.
But, of course.
And good magicians.
But just
not
haven't made
anybody
the world see. Yeah. Globally, no.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Nobody that's like made a name for himself, like in the country or like in the magic community, but there's some magicians. But again, because we're so small, so there's only that amount of magicians. So it's not like we have the same amount like in America.
I mentioned at the top of the podcast about working comedy clubs, and I don't know if that's really still a thing over there. It has really fallen off the radar. I mean, we don't have the comedy club tours that used to have in the U.S., and I suspect that's pretty much worldwide the same situation. But I know that you, when you talked in your lecture that I heard there at the Magi Fest, you talked about honing some of your skills early on in the comedy club and going back and testing and retesting some of the things that later became part of your regular routine.
Yeah, I haven't performed that much in Denmark since FISM, but that is what I did, and mostly what I do is I would do comedy clubs or comedy events with some comedian friends, and I would then do some magic or whatever. For years, I just did sword swallowing and juggling.
Really? I don't see you as a sword swallower. I mean,
No, exactly.
Just blown my mind there. But
that was just because for years I thought I didn't want to like do magic in front of people because I was scared of them figuring out the secret, or like magic wasn't that cool. But then doing juggling or sword swallowing, which is like actual tricks that are cool, and at least I think they're cool. So I did that for years, and just with comedy. And then the last few years, I'd always done magic as a hobby, but then the last few years I began doing more magic on stage and in the comedy clubs. And that also means that all the magic I make is made for that setting of being in a comedy club, usually with just a handheld microphone on a stand and with bad angles and a small room without any wings or curtains or anything, which is a great place to create magic for, because if it works there, it'll work pretty much anywhere because of the bad conditions that's usually is in a comedy club. So yeah, that is where I mostly perform.
Do they have a lot of restaurants or magicians who work at restaurants, or is that a thing then in Denmark?
No, it's never really been a thing. There's one guy I know that's doing it, and that's it. And he's like the guy that everybody knows. Oh, he's doing
The whole country.
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow.
Nobody's doing it. It's not a thing, so it's not something you could say like, oh, well, this restaurant has it, so that you shouldn't you have it. So it's difficult to sell people on it. But this one guy, I think he's done it for same place for 20 years in Copenhagen. That's just his thing. So yeah, nobody has gotten into it. And so the places to do magic here is not that many. There's not that many places to do it. It is so doing it in comedy clubs was my way of getting a stage, but also that is a tough setting because you have to do your own material because the comedian, like, they write their own stuff. They want you to do it. At one point, there was a not the greatest magician in the world was doing a spot in a comedy club. And this comedian, which is fairly well known, he saw this guy just doing a bit he'd seen before. And he thought this magician had stolen the trick. And so he was very disappointed to see that somebody was doing somebody else's trick, even though in our little world, I had the rights to do a trick. And that's not how it is in a comic club. You have to do your own things. So that is nice because I make my own things, but it's not a setting that will fit everybody.
Well, if there are not restaurants for people to work, and it seems like that today, I'm sure it's the same in Denmark as it is perhaps the rest of the world. That is, there is a lot of close-up because it's easier, cheaper entry. In other words, you get a deck of cards and I'm a magician now. And you download a couple of things from Penguin or somebody and suddenly you're a magician. But where do the close-up magicians work? In other words, are there, I'm assuming there are trade shows certainly, but also cocktail parties and things like that where they can do strolling, or is that the thing there too or not?
There's a few people that's doing the trade show thing, but no, close-up is not a business over here.
Really?
Everybody that gets into magic, they will pretty easily, quickly have like a parlor stand-up set and then do parties, birthday parties, big events, school shows, corporate shows, like stuff like that. That's the main thing most people are doing here. They're getting a doctor's bag with your 30 minutes and then doing a gig. That is what most people are doing if they're doing shows.
Okay, and birthday parties, I guess, children's birthday parties and things, yeah.
Yeah, and just, any party. That's a lot of the private shows. You hire magicians to come and do 30 minutes at your 30th, 40th, 50th birthday. That's pretty much the only way to work here.
So with that, it sounds like that it's almost discouraging magicians from, or people from, following magic as a hobby, let alone a profession, when there's really no place to work within the country. So like you and Ruin are out of the country. You're doing things other places, certainly, to follow your success.
But
finding your footing, first of all, just in the comedy clubs and like in Rune's case on television and elsewhere like that. But I think it'd be difficult. So I'm guessing that the general magic club population is fairly small in the whole country.
Yeah. It's in my local club, I think there's maybe 30 people and then 10 of them will show up at the meetings. And I think the one in Copenhagen has maybe a little over 100 that's in the club, and then 50 will show up or something like that. There's not that many.
And you bring in lectures from other countries from time to time?
Yeah, we did that more 10 years ago. So I work in a magic shop where my boss would usually help bring people in to do the lecture tour where they would do Denmark, they would do Norway, Sweden, Germany maybe. But we haven't done that in a while. And if we don't set up the tour, it's very difficult to fly anybody in from overseas because it's not going to, like doing two clubs here, you're not going to make that much money. We and then since the pandemic, it's been a little bit less. If we get an offer, somebody that's on a tour, we'll get them here. But and every time I see somebody at a convention that want to go to Denmark, I will always try and help them. I think at Magic Live, I told like three people, I'll help you, but like only if you're fine with just breaking even. I'll help you set up the trip,
a vacation.
You can't make money, get it going here, but you get to see Denmark, which is a nice country, and maybe Sweden and Norway and stuff like that. But it's difficult getting people here.
It is a beautiful country. I've been up there a time or two and have enjoyed it both times and would like to return there again. But thinking about some of the clubs and spaces and different distances, I was talking with a friend in Alaska, and he was saying, well, you can come up here and lecture in Fairbanks or wherever. And then I think there are like a half dozen magicians here, but the next closest place is about a 12-hour drive, and they've got three magicians there. I mean, Alaska is huge, obviously, and spread out. So, and not many magicians. So I was like, not only is it not worth your time, but certainly not worth your money then either, unless you just wanted to see Alaska. And it's not a lot there compared to, let's say, Denmark and Sweden. And Norway, certainly. Yeah. A lot different right there. Well, as far as the development then of the show and everything, have you been on television then locally? I assume after you had won, they probably had you on some local morning shows or things.
Yeah, I did. Like the day after I got home from Quebec after winning FISM, I did the biggest like morning news show, the Good Morning Denmark show. And it was... First of all, I showed up, Air Canada lost all my luggage, which is pretty much my whole like wardrobe because we were in Canada for 2 weeks. So I didn't have any extra clothing. So the t-shirt I was wearing was the same one. I just did a like 2 day journey getting back to my country.
And, oh man.
And I didn't have my trophy. I didn't have anything. I landed in Copenhagen for then to drive 3 hours back to my home to take a shower and sleep for a little bit, then go back to Copenhagen to do the show. And so I was so tired, and they didn't care. Like, if for them, it was just like, oh, we have a Danish guy that won, he's the world champion, whatever. And so it was just a weird experience. The host wasn't that good. I ended up doing, they wanted me to do something, but because I lost everything,
sure.
So the pretty much only thing I had was the day of parts, and I would just do some of the tricks that I usually do, but the host was really bad at doing it, like picking a card. Like, she was one of those people that she should know better because she's a host on a TV show, that she's the one that's going to show the emotions so the viewer knows what to feel.
Right.
But so when I say, oh, your card is this, she went like, and sort of didn't want to give it away, that she was like more ignored that, oh, how did you do that? Like, yeah.
Instead of being surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of showing that, oh, I'm good at this, because the story is he's pretty good at this. So it was just a weird experience. And so it didn't give me anything. It was like, it was fine, but it felt weird. I did not that I was like wanting to get a lot of bookings out of it, but it gave me literally nothing.
That's too bad.
Doing the biggest show here. So yeah, and also right before I won in Quebec, the first Danish guy forever basically won the Tour de France, the big cycling thing. So that was a big event. He was like 2 days before something. The Tour de France was over. He got back to Denmark, and like, I don't know, 100,000 people is showing up at the town hall and is congratulating this guy for winning this huge sporting event. And then 2 days later, I win the world championship of magic.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. So
that's
that,
not
that,
right.
it was fun. And also it made me realize that, yeah, it doesn't really matter. It's just, I'm very happy with the award, but it's just, oh, I'm good at card tricks.
Well, that does lead me to the next one, that what was your reason for wanting to enter the contest? I assume it's obviously to win. I remember your story at Magic Live, but you were almost kind of coerced into competing. But then what was your long-term goal? Was it to win or to get a show in Vegas or to travel the world? Or what do you think?
I don't know. Like, I've always liked competing. So we did for years, like a small, junior convention for kids between the ages of 10 and 20. And, so I went every year when I was, 10 and 20, between 10 and 20. And they had a stage competition, a close-up competition. And it just seemed like the most natural thing to enter the competition, to show my friends, the other magicians, that look, this is what I've been working on. So I did that every year because I felt like that's what you do, even though there was maybe, I don't know, 10 people competing in each competition.
Category.
Yeah. And, but it was just a nice thing to do, to have a deadline, to show people. So I always did that when I was a kid. And then.
And you won a lot of them then too. I guess they were kind of jealous a little bit of you.
At that time when I was 13, 14, 15, 16, I got consistently a third place and a second place every year.
Funny.
Never won the junior competition. And then we did, for the first time in 2016, we did a Danish championship of magic. They hadn't done that for years. And then they did that. And that one I won.
Okay. As an adult.
And yeah. I was 20 years old at that point, and I finally won. Great. And then they did it again the year after. I won again. Then the year after, I won again. And then I went to the Scandinavian, like the Nordic championship, and I won that one in 2018. And so I just began finally having stuff that was good enough to win. And I considered, okay, maybe I should do bigger competitions. But I didn't really think about FISM because I'd always liked FISM. I got into magic around 2009-10, right after FISM. So I saw those FISM videos and followed that whole thing of the people that won in 09. And the same thing, just kept following FISM. And I knew a few people that entered. And when we did the conventions, we would usually have people right after FISM that won. They would talk, and I always loved this idea of FISM, people showing their best 8 minutes. But I never thought I would be good enough to even participate, because I heard you had to qualify through whatever. And then, yeah, right around the last FISM was in 2018, and okay, maybe I should go to the next one, which was supposed to be in 2021. And then I looked into it, and okay, maybe I could do that. And then because of the pandemic, it was postponed. And then I thought, okay, maybe I'm not going to do it. And then I had a friend that was like, hey, you're the only guy from Denmark that has ever had a chance. You should go. And then because of the pandemic, they had extended the deadline. So luckily I could enter, because I said it's closed. And then I got my local club to sponsor me, and everything was fine. I was now going to compete, which was just huge to do that. So I didn't really think about what it would mean, what it would be. It was just the same thing as I did the years before, going to this competition, having the deadline, showing people, look, this is what I've made.
Uh-huh.
And then going to Quebec, I was ready. I had made some stuff that was the same act I've been working on for years, but I made it better. I made it a full act that would fit the competition. And then I did it, and I was so surprised.
You didn't think you nailed it? I mean, I know you did a good job, and you probably thought you did a good job, but in comparison, when you saw the others, you thought, I mean, you really were surprised.
Yeah, I saw the competitors the days before I was going to go on, and I kept seeing the competition throughout the week, and I couldn't really, I didn't know my own skill level. I didn't know, because I had friends that had done, the European Championship, they'd done other international competitions where you would be scored with the FISM point system, and I'd never done one of those. So I had a few friends from Sweden and Finland that knew where their point level was. I had no idea. Again, at FISM, you have to earn over 80 points to win. Like, you don't just win. You have to have the points to be good enough to win.
Right.
I had no idea what my points would be. And then when I did my performance on stage, all I remember was that I was in the moment. I had fun, and everything worked, and I was very happy. And then after being on stage, I walked backstage, and my friends came out and just hugged me and said, oh, that was great and amazing. And then afterwards, I was told, because I have the lights in my eyes, I just did my act as I usually do, which is, when I say the last line, I say, oh, that's my time, and then I'll walk off stage. And it was afterwards when he told me that I just straight up left the biggest standing ovation that had been at the convention at that time.
You didn't even see it.
I couldn't see it.
Because
I didn't
the
even
spotlight was in your eye.
Yeah. And then afterwards, my friend had a video show me walking off while there's the standing ovation going on. That was very surreal. And then throughout the week at FISM, because I competed on the second or third day, people kept coming up to me and saying they liked it. And yeah, again, people I knew came up to me like, oh, you were really good. Amazing. And then, later I was told I won, because they had to tell me, because if you win the category, you have to perform again. So I was told just in the hallway, the stage director guy came over to me and told me that I won. And I asked, are you sure? did I earn 80 points? Like, did I earn the points? And he was like, yes. And I started crying and then realizing, oh, I have to perform again.
Did he say how many points you actually did score?
None of that. He just said, yeah, I got over 80. And then I performed again, which was amazing. Knowing I wasn't going to win Grand Prix, I was not going to. That didn't even enter my head. Like, oh, maybe I'm going to get Grand Prix. Because of course I'm not. Because the guy that got Grand Prix on stage, Laurent Toulon, like, he broke the record for most points on stage. And he was the best. So I didn't even think about that. So I was very happy winning the biggest award I could in my category. And then since FISM, I've done a lot of things I'm very proud of being able to do, which one of them was to go to Magic Live finally. And which also means I've performed in Denmark maybe 10 times since FISM. So in 2 years, because there's not a lot of work here. And especially not for like an act where you do an act of 8 to 10 minutes. And I've been luckily enough been traveling and I've been going places where they want to book an act like that.
That's so great. Yeah. Like part of a variety act that you're just the comedy part of that.
Yeah. But it's weird that FISM it's been 2 years and like 3 weeks or something. Like it's, I think about FISM every day. My trophy is in the middle of my living room. And I just had the most amazing time in Quebec. And it's weird that it's been almost already been 2 years. And
I was going to ask you where it is that you keep your trophy, because it's always interesting when I hear celebrities, for an example, who have won Academy Awards, them putting them on their mantle, or sometimes they put them in the bedroom, or the oddest of places, I think. So where is yours displayed? You say in the living room there?
In my living room, like in the middle of it, I have a bookshelf with a lot of magic books, and I then like carved out a portion to put the trophy and the little diploma thing saying that it's good. So I can see it every day. It says my couch and work. I see the trophy. And like, I'm so happy about it. But I still feel like it's so weird. I have a first place FISM trophy in my living room, because I really grew up like looking up to people that had did FISM and did well. And some of my heroes now also friends, like that have maybe a second place or third place or first place. And just in a weird way that, oh, I'm on their level, but I don't feel like that. I'm like, oh, I'm still just this dumb kid. Yeah.
You're certainly deserving of it, and it's well done, and congratulations then on that. I have often heard you compared to Rick Merrill, of being the Rick Merrill of Denmark, from the standpoint that he talks about being homeschooled, and you've got this kind of act, which, again, I want to talk a little bit about, and that is about how that you not just develop the character, but your character is you, from the standpoint that you're a little bit nervous, or, did I say this? I'm not sure, have I told you this? Repeating yourself. You talk a little bit about that on Magic Live, but can you discuss that and what your issues are?
It's weird. I think you at Magi Fest, you were one of the first people to mention Rick Merrill, and I'd never thought of him as like, oh, I maybe have the same delivery or whatever, because I like Rick Merrill. His act is one of the best, and I like his persona, but I've only just seen his act and maybe two other small tricks from him. So I get why people would compare it to him, but I never thought of it in the beginning. But I take it as a compliment. My act is, I can see it's the same way of me being nervous and presenting myself. Rick also starts with, oh, I'm homeschooled and awkward. And I basically start the same way. I open my act saying, sometimes when I perform, I get a little bit nervous and then I forget what I'm doing. Right. How I said that. First of all, it's a nice joke in the beginning to just getting people to know this is going to be funny, hopefully. But also telling them the fact that I was nervous was also this loophole of getting away with being, because I was, especially at FISM, I was very nervous.
And breaking that fourth wall.
Yeah. And I knew I was red in my face, and I could maybe show, not that I was shaking, but maybe it could show through that I was nervous, because I have stage fright all the time. I've never gotten over having stage fright, actually being like scared and being nervous and it's always just been a part of who I am because I take what I do so seriously. I don't take the audience's time for granted. I want to do my best. So I've always just had stage fright whenever I'm doing stuff. So going out and telling people, oh, I'm a little bit nervous, was this great way of getting away with being nervous because it fit the character, it fit the act. So it could also just be a joke, which luckily a lot of people didn't realize that, oh, he's actually nervous. It just looked like, oh, he's good at playing that character. And yes, I'm pretty good at playing that one character, but also I'm nervous and I just told you so.
Because that is you.
Yeah.
It's not just a character, it is you.
So a lot of the character is me, that I am nervous and stuff like that. But also some of it is just a complete lie. The fact that I'm saying, oh, I forget what I'm doing. No, I don't. Like, I have a pretty good memory. I know what I'm doing and I've prepared. So it is, it's, some of it is an act and some of it is real. But just that, like, the secret of just being nervous and then telling them in a joke has just saved me so much whenever I've done the act. So earlier this year, I did a festival in Madrid and I learned my act in Spanish. So every night I would do it in Spanish. And the most important sentence for me to translate and like making sure they get this was, oh, I'm a little bit nervous. Like getting that whole thing across because now there was this extra element of me speaking a language I don't speak and then sounding like a tourist that just learned Spanish, which is what I did. So making sure that, yeah, I'm still nervous. This is still a character. I'm just also speaking bad Spanish.
So they love you even more because you're exposing your weakness.
Yeah. I think so. That I'm very honest about, oh, this is very new. I'm speaking a language I don't understand because I want to be understood because in Madrid, they don't speak English that well. So again, because I care about the audience, I don't take their time for granted. So me taking the time to actually learn Spanish was very fun. But then also keeping the character was very important, that just because that I learned this, I'm so cool, I can do it in different languages. It was very important that, no, I'm still nervous. I'm maybe even more nervous because right now I don't know what I'm saying.
Right.
Yes.
So how do you get over that?
I don't, the stage fright?
Yeah. What do you do? Like when you're backstage, it was interesting during that discussion with you and also Eric Tate, and Eric was saying, well, he builds Legos to do something that keeps his mind occupied. Other people have different kinds of things they're doing backstage to try to calm them down. What is it that you do?
Oh, I don't know. I usually just lean into it that I know I'm nervous, so I'm just going to be nervous because then I also know that I care and I have a comedian friend that I perform with a lot and he's just gotten so used to it now that he doesn't even mention it because I will go before the show. I'll be like, oh, it's going to be a bad show. They're going to hate it. Oh no, I'm so nervous. It's not going to go well. And it's very dumb, but I will talk myself down like that because that again makes me want to do a better job. Like, oh, I don't want it to go bad. So I want to be better. And then also when it then goes well, hopefully, that is feels like an even bigger accomplishment because I told myself it was going to be really bad. But I'm sure that is a dumb way of doing it. I should just be comfortable in what I'm doing. But yeah, I've never done that. If I've done shows where I'm not nervous because maybe I've done this before, I know what I'm doing, whatever, then I will get nervous over the fact that I'm not nervous. And then it's the same thing. So, yeah, I'm just a mess every time I'm going on stage. I'm sure if people saw me before, they would be like, "Why are you doing this to yourself?" But yeah, I don't have a good technique for doing it. I then prepare my best that everything is in order, and I will usually be at the spot I'm performing at hours before, like. I'm like too many hours before. If I'm just going to a gig here in Denmark, I would at least be there an hour and a half before. Even if it's a private thing, I will be like, oh, I'm just going to wait outside. Because knowing that I'm there will keep me a little bit more calm. And also, if I'm just waiting and anxious, I could just do that at the performance venue instead of being anxious at home. I'm always just going places very early so I can be there and be nervous in the right setting. And again, I'm sure I could get so much extra time if I just learned how to manage my stage fright.
But, well, I think by getting there early, that does help to avoid that. I recall reading something that Slight Innie had said decades ago about preparing your battlefield, and that is of going to the place early enough, if you can, the day before, the week before, if it's somewhere within driving distance, you go check it out and talk also then with the banquet manager, wherever it is you're going to be performing, to find out what the staging is going to look like, what are the lights, where are people going to be seated, can you perhaps change the room a little bit beforehand, before you arrive there. Even if you're there an hour before, you may find out, oh my goodness, I don't like the way that these chairs are pointed in this direction, or I'm up against this wall, or too far away, or there's too much of a dance floor between the first row and myself, or whatever it is, you might be able to control that a little bit if you get there early enough. And by doing that, then you have that control, I would think, and you can start to get over some of those anxieties.
Yeah, and I've always done that, and I like doing that. I know people that will show up with their magic in the doctor bag and just know that they have a half hour and they can play anywhere, and that's probably true, but I would much rather spend an hour or more and then be there and knowing, oh, I have to move this and this has to be done this way. And because I feel more calm in that way. And but I've just done that. I like being on stage. I like being in the theater or whatever it is. Like at FISM, I was at the backstage. We could get in at 6 a.m. So I got in like 6 a.m. But I was performing on stage at 11.
Okay.
But I was backstage though, like five hours before. And I was just there, okay, making sure this is the backstage, this is where I'm at, setting my stuff up. And I then had multiple hours where I was just set up. And again, that for that situation, it was good because I cared. I delivered the best I could, which was, of course, the best time to do that in that competition. But I will do that. Anywhere, be there as early as I can.
Reminds me of another story where I heard, I believe Lance Burton was talking about when he won the gold medal for the IBM back in 78 or something like that. And I think it was Louisville, Kentucky. Anyhow, he arrived at the theater hours before, in which he was practicing with his doves, essentially just kind of throwing them out into the audience with the spotlight. So this way the doves would get comfortable and knowing the size of the stage and the audience and coming back and landing on the stand behind him on that light lamp stand and everything.
Yeah.
But it was just that commitment to excellence of going in beforehand and getting to know the lights, the stage. And also it's important, I think, in your case of being able to do the sound check because you need to make sure that it's going to be working because you said you typically will work with a mic on a stand as opposed to a lavalier or a mic on. You prefer that as opposed to, I mean.
Yes. I prefer the mic on the stand because it's something to hide behind. That's really how it started. But I have this thing I'm behind.
It's protecting me from the audience. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something between me and the audience. I in the beginning I felt very naked not having the microphone. It felt like that is the talking stick. I have the thing that is giving me the power to be on stage. So I've just structured all my magic around having a mic stand and some methods around the fact that I have a big object I can move around. But then when I did FISM, I've done my act with a mic stand. I can do my whole FISM act with a mic stand because I move so little and I had choreographed it around being able to speak when I was when I was near the mic. But then I think at FISM was the first time I realized, oh, my FISM act is maybe better without the actual mic stand. So that act is, I've only done that act now without the mic stand and actually having a mic on my face. But yeah, I don't prefer that. I don't want to make my magic like that right now, at least.
I know in your lecture, you have a lot of things that involve audience participation. And so obviously when you bring people up, and I'm assuming again, back on comedy clubs or something, you would use the mic. And I'm assuming if you don't take the stand and move it back and forth, you probably remove the mic and then go back and forth with the mic.
Yeah, I usually never get people on stage, but the fact that I can then take it off and then like put it in the face if they're in the front row, getting them to speak. Yes, that is much better than having a mic on my face. So yeah, I prefer that, and but it's really a thing of having something to hide behind and having the talking stick, because it's illogical for me as a magician to want to have a mic stand, because it's in a way we have props we're gonna move with, but yeah, I prefer that, and also not having a mic in my pocket or in my belt in the way.
Well, are you starting to really get away from or learning not to have such anxiety and stage fright as you do more and more shows? Or, in other words, is it dampened? Is it less than what it was? Or is it still stage fright just the same every time?
It's less than when I was 14 and 15.
Okay.
Because at that point, I actually was shaking a little bit. Or not something I really noticed, but a judge in a competition told me that he felt that I was nervous. So at that point, it was a very big problem, and it will be if I'm doing a show that is in a setting I'm not comfortable with. If I'm doing a show where there's too many changes, I will have a panic attack. Basically,
okay.
I will fully like not work. I don't like it. But if I'm doing like Magic Live or something that, oh, I know everybody wants this to be a success in the same way that I want, and I'm comfortable with the people, I'm doing an act I know, then it's much less, but it's still there all the time. But it's not as big of a problem as it's been before. But that's also why I only take on like things that I like, it's things I want to do. I've never in my life made a decision because of money. That's not an interesting thing for me. Like because I'm a air quotes artist, that that I'm here because I like performing, doing this art. So taking a gig just because it's good money does not appeal to me in any way. So I will only do things that make sense for me. That Magic Live, that's the dream. I want to do that. All the other conventions or festivals, that stuff I want to do. I usually say yes before knowing if I will get paid or how much I'll get paid, because it doesn't interest me at all.
Well, that leads me to another question. Are you, do you consider yourself a part-time professional from the standpoint that you have another full-time job, or is this wholly what you do? Since there are so few opportunities in Denmark, and you're having to work outside the country and having to find that, I mean, I don't know if you have an agent who's working for you, or if you're doing that all yourself, or if you've got something else you do on a full-time basis.
Yeah. Like right now I'm in the magic shop, and that's where I get my money. And actually 2 years ago after FISM, because so many people came up to me at the convention and they were surprised that I wasn't full-time or whatever. And they were like, you should be full-time. And then I got home to the magic shop and I asked my boss, hey, should I quit? And he was like, no. And I know my boss very well. We're really close. We're like family. So just asked him, hey, should I quit? And he was like, no, you can still work here and do the things. And I've done that now for 2 years. And he's very
accommodating.
Nice. And
yeah,
to give me time off to go. And like, because right now when going to Vegas for Magic Live, I just needed some time off longer than expected. And then he was very nice. Like, oh, we'll figure it out. So that has worked for 2 years now. I've considered again, maybe I should do something else. But yeah, in some way, I'm a part-time professional. But it's not about money. So. I feel like you're only a professional if you make money. And I don't, I really don't care. But that is maybe also because I have the magic shop. I get that a small amount of money I need to live. I don't spend that much money. I'm very cheap. So I don't need that much money.
Yeah, you live frugally. So, yeah, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Kind of wrap up, I want to go back to another question I'd asked earlier, and that is what you expected to get out of winning this. In other words, what is your long-term 5, 10, 30-year goal Did you expect to use this as a springboard after winning FISM to do something else? And I assume you're doing that something else now, but where do you see yourself, I guess, in the future?
That's an interesting question that I've thought about a lot the last few days, because I don't really know what my goal is, because FISM was not, I didn't think of it as, I have a career and I'm going to do this thing. I remember doing a competition, one of the Danish championships, and right after the winning at this convention center, I threw away my act. Figuratively, I took all this stuff, threw in a trash can because I didn't want to travel home with it, because in my mind, I was now done with that act. That's done. I did it in that one competition. And didn't realize, maybe people will book me to do that act. And the same thing really happened at FISM. I didn't realize, now people want to see the FISM first place winning act.
Right.
So I didn't have that in mind when I did it. And now, of course, that has led to stuff but it's weird because I'm the same person as before FISM. And I mentioned this. So last year I did Fool Us. So I got to perform on the show. And in the little interview I do with the host on the show, I mentioned the fact that I'd sent Fool Us an email 4 or 5 years ago saying, can I be on the show? And they never reply. And then I win FISM and they reply.
So, what a coincidence.
But the weirdest thing is they replied on that email. That was, they answered that specific email. They didn't even send another one.
They'd kept for all those years. Okay.
Yeah. So I was so confused getting an email from an old email account I didn't use anymore and saying, this is a reply to something that happened 4 years ago.
So I understand you have already appeared on Penn and Teller Fool Us. What was your experience like actually going to Vegas? I assume that's the first time you actually went to Vegas prior to Magic Live.
No, I've been to Vegas a few times just to watch shows, and then I'm very good friends with Nick Desot, who lives in Vegas.
Uh-huh.
So I've been there a few times, but then last year I did Fool Us, and they flew me over. I had a great time. I'd heard really good things about the show. It's, of course, it's also been running for 10 years, so they know what they're doing and they're not exposing secrets and anything. So yeah, I had a great time. They were really easy to work with. Both the people sending all the emails and organizing the travel. And then in Vegas on stage, it was very, very comfortable being with everybody.
So you worked, I guess, with Mike Close, and you didn't see Penn and Teller until actually you were on stage seeing them sitting there, right?
Yeah. I don't even think I saw Michael Close before. He came down because I'd done one Zoom call with him just going over the trick, and then he came down before the taping and said, thank you for coming, everybody, and you got to do a great job and all this stuff. It was, again, very nice. Everybody was so sweet. And then, yes, first time I see Penn and Teller is when I am on stage. And so right before the recording, you have to stand in the middle of the stage. So that you don't walk in. You're not introduced and walk in. You just stand in the middle of the stage, and the host says, and now this guy. So I'm standing there a minute or so before the taping actually starts. I'm just waiting because I'm just going to do my bit. And then Penn just waves at me, and I didn't even realize, of course, he can see me and he could. And so he waves at me. I'm like, okay, I'll wave back. And it was just very comfortable that, okay, they know I'm here. They want me here. And yeah, I really had a great time. And the trick I did on the show was something I just made basically for the show. I had this idea for a trick that I thought would fit the show in that way. It wasn't a card trick. It was something I thought Penn and Teller would like because it was sort of their style. So a trick I'd made a couple of years earlier specifically to pitch for the show. So I finally got to do it, which was pretty cool. And both Penn and Teller told me that they really liked it and appreciated the different style I had. So yeah, really, really fun experience.
But it didn't fool him, I guess.
No, I didn't. But that was not the point. I knew I wasn't going to fool him. I even Michael Close, there's all these rumors of Michael Close being the guy in their ear. So you tell him the secret so he knows. And Michael Close did not even ask. He did not ask for the secret because he'd seen the video I sent to them. And it's pretty obvious from the video. So he never even asked, which I was fine. Like, I knew it wasn't going to fool them because it's very obvious. I, in a way, even though I talk about always fooling everybody and wanting to aim higher, I don't think it's the best magic trick in the world. I don't think it necessarily is going to fool anybody. But it was also meant more as a fun concept, a fun little comedy piece. And it does not really matter about the method and the trick. But yes, it's a very, very, very dumb trick that if you haven't seen it, you can go on YouTube and search Morten Christensen Fool of Us, and I'm sure you'll find it.
I'll make sure I put that on the blog so that way when people go to the magicwordpodcast.com this week's episode, they can watch that.
So it is given stuff like that that now people will listen, but I feel like I've had interesting stuff to share for a while, but now that's given me at least a platform that people will know that, oh, Morten has some stuff that's worth listening to. So when I got to do the Magic Castle for the first time last year, that was a big dream. And being booked for some of these conventions, Magile sets, Magic-wise. So right now I'm just gone with the flow, getting to do cool things, but I don't really know what the goal is. Like, I just spent 2 weeks in Vegas for Magic Live, and like that could easily be the dream. Oh, I want a Vegas show, but I don't know. Like, if that's what I want, do I want to move there? Do this? So right now, I'm just doing what I did before. I just do the shows I want to do.
Okay.
Luckily, now that is even better shows and cooler opportunities to have. And I'm also doing more stuff in the magic community. I get to lecture sometimes, share my thoughts on stage at the general session was really fun. And I'm writing a book with some of my stuff because, again, I've worked in a magic shop since I was 14, so half of my life. And I've seen pretty much every magic release for the last 15 years. And knowing all these people, and I like the community so much that being able to give something back and like having my work on a shelf, being like, this is some of my work, you can have a look and be inspired, use what you want, is also just pretty cool. And I'll be able to do that because, again, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't because of people putting out stuff that I could learn from.
Good point. So by passing on some of your knowledge, you might be creating the next Morten Christensen then too.
Yeah.
And by inspiring some young person. Well, this has been great. Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to close by asking my guests what it is that's important to you and what is, not like your word like abracadabra, but what is your philosophy of life?
Something like... I don't know, ask questions and do better. Like, don't, it's never, what's the easiest way to say it? Like, never settle. Like, my magic is really my life. That is what takes up most of my time. So hearing magicians say stuff like, oh, this is good enough for late people is always something that pisses me off because it's again, taking them for granted that they're dumb. They will never figure this out. Where I always aim higher to fool magicians, to have better, newer things that will fool the smartest person. So yeah, never settle and never just do the easy thing. It's probably the things I'm always looking for, like a ways to do that.
Right. Well, great words to live by, good suggestions. And thank you again, Morten. I appreciate your comments here and for taking the time to be on
here. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So with the Magic Word Podcast, that was Morten Christensen. This is Scotty out. Thank you very much, Morten, for being my guest here this week. And thank you, listeners, for coming back week to week. I hope that you got a lot out of this week's episode as much as I did. It was great catching up with him, and I look forward to watching Morten's career as it skyrockets. I know he is just going to be going somewhere, just not quite sure, but it's going to be something successful, I know, on a worldwide stage. So congratulations on what you have accomplished so far, and also good luck into the future. Well, I want to thank everybody again for coming back and listening to the podcast from week to week as we again start to approach number 900. And I don't see any end in sight in the immediate future, certainly, that's for sure. And also, I want to encourage people to please subscribe to our pod letter. So if you go to themagicwordpodcast.com, you can see where you can sign up for that. For some reason, over the last 6 months, it seems to have stagnated. We have some who unsubscribe. We have an equal number of people who unsubscribe as those who subscribe. And so it has been just, we haven't gained or lost more than one person in the last 6 months. It's just kind of a weird statistic there. So if you can help us, that would be great by just subscribing. And that way you can hear what's happening from week to week, who is going to be on the podcast, and also some suggestions from the archives. And also if we have contests, that there will be the first place where we will be posting that. So you'll have an opportunity to be among the first to enter the contest. And if you also get an opportunity to give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you use to listen to these podcasts, that would be outstanding, because it's been a while there again since we have last had anyone or ones who have actually gone out and given us 5-star reviews and some kind comments. For that matter, we just really haven't had anything happening. If it's anything less than 5 comments, or rather 5 stars, then I appreciate you maybe just keeping that to yourself. And you could share that maybe with some other of your friends when you're having some coffee or whatever, that you're at the next Magic Club meeting. Or perhaps better still, sending a suggestion to me as to what you would like to see or what it is that you don't like about this podcast and what you suggest I might change in order to make this better for each and every one of my listeners. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and remember, don't settle. This is Scotty out.